learning objectives for today, we're going to explain the appropriate uses of cow milk-based protein hydrolysate, free amino acid, preterm, and preterm discharge formulas, describe the efficacy of pre and probiotics in infant formula, as well as define at least two types of modular products. So we know our job as public health nutritionists is to help inform mothers of the benefits of breastfeeding. However, moms may still choose not to or may not be able to breastfeed, or at least not exclusively. So some of the American Academy of Pediatrics indications for when to use infant formula are listed here for you. As a supplement for human milk when mom chooses not to breastfeed, or at least not exclusively, maybe due to supply issues. As a substitute for human milk in infants for whom breastfeeding or human milk is contraindicated. The list for these is fairly short. Some include galactosemia, maternal illegal drug use, and untreated tuberculosis. Specialized formulas may also be needed for certain infants who may be temporarily unable to breastfeed, such as seen in those with pylothorax, and we will talk about that in a case study or an example down a few slides down the road. As a supplement for breastfed infants who are not gaining weight adequately, so we may need to use a combination of both human milk as well as more calorically dense formula if we have a baby that's not gaining quite as well. In terms of formula composition, all infant formulas that are on the market must meet the Formula Act of 1980. Basically, what they did was establish minimum and maximum for 29 different nutrients, including protein, fat, vitamins, minerals, and trace elements. For the most part, as we know, formulas are designed to mimic human milk as much as possible. We know this cannot be a complete replication due to many things such as immunological factors. However, we are constantly evolving, as you all know, in the world of infant formula, with one of those components being pre and probiotics, which we'll talk a little bit about later on in the talk as well. Oligosaccharides, as well as lactobacillus and bifidobacterium, these are generally recognized as safe by the FDA, and over the past several years, we've seen a lot more of these additives in infant formula. In terms of the categories that we're going to cover today, we will go through basically in this order, cow milk-based, protein hydrolysate, free amino acid or elemental, preterm or preemie, and then the preterm discharge or transitional formulas. I have purposely left off the soy-based today, as there's not a lot of the specialty formulas or the exempt formulas within that particular category. And what I'd like you to do, you know, as we are talking about these, it's not a complete list of every formula that's out there, otherwise the talk would probably have to be 4 hours long instead of one. But what I'd like you to do is thinking about not necessarily whether it's a contract formula or something that's provided necessarily in your state, as things may vary from state to state, but the rationale for why we would want to utilize a particular type of formula for a particular infant. And I've incorporated, as I've alluded to, some case studies throughout the presentation to kind of demonstrate some of these issues. In terms of standard cow milk-based formula, this is obviously the first choice that we go to for, you know, healthy term infants who are unable to breastfeed or unable to meet all of their needs from human milk alone. The primary carbohydrate source, as we know, is lactose, which is similar to human milk. And then the typical caloric distribution in terms of carbohydrate, protein, and fat are listed there for you. So what we'll hop into next, discussing some of the specialty cow milk-based formulas. And these are basically formulas that have primarily cow milk-based, you know, cow milk protein, and then they have special indications for particular infants who have specific nutritional needs. Some of these formulas, and a lot of these you may be familiar with, some you may not, Enfamil AR Lipo, Similac PM6040, and Support Lipo, and then Monogen. So first I thought we'd bring up something that we see quite a bit, both in the WIC client setting as well as the hospital setting. A 2-month-old with frequent sit-ups and poor weight gain is seen at his WIC appointment. Dad states that his niece has similar symptoms and was recently started on Enfamil AR with good improvement. He's wondering if this would be a good formula for his child. How would you proceed? So there are several things to think about in this situation. One is just baseline knowledge of what is in this formula and what the rationale is. So AR basically stands for added rice. And what is done here is they take out a portion of the lactose, which again is the major carbohydrate portion of the formula, and replace it with rice starch. So essentially this thickens the formula, and when the infant drinks it, when it hits the stomach acid, that's what helps thicken up. It helps keep the formula within the infant's stomach rather than it being spit up. It helps maintain nutrient composition. You know, previously in practice was to add actually rice cereal to help thicken the formula. And one advantage to this is that you don't manipulate the vitamins and minerals that are also important for the infant. One thing to keep in mind is, you know, having the discussion with this particular client, really the physician should medically evaluate the patient first in order to determine the diagnosis. There could certainly be something else going on with this infant. Do they have, you know, some type of obstruction? Is there some other issue that could be causing the baby to spit up? Or is it simply that they, as most infants, don't have that developed GI tract where they're just, you know, they're going to spit up, but it's not anything that's necessarily affecting their growth per se, and they don't necessarily need a specialized formula. In recent years, they've added two prebiotics, the Enfamil AR, the GOS, and the polydextrose, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in the coming slides. And then of note, Enfamil AR is not intended for preterm infants, and it's also not to be mixed greater than 24 calories per ounce, and that's because it is already a viscous formula, and mixing to more than 24 ounces, infants can have difficulty extracting it from the bottle. So what is a prebiotic? Essentially, the definition is that it's non-digestible food ingredients that promote the growth of what we would call good or beneficial bacteria in the gut. Some examples that I'm sure a lot of you have heard of or are familiar with, the fructooligosaccharides or the FOS, the galactooligosaccharides or GOS, which I mentioned is currently added to Enfamil AR, as well as polydextrose, which is also added to Enfamil AR. In order to be a prebiotic, really there needs to be four criteria that are met minimally. They need to be non-digestible by the upper GI tract so that they can actually do what they need to do in the lower GI tract. They are used by beneficial microflora in the colon. They need to alter that microflora in the colon to promote a healthier composition and then also to induce beneficial effects. So most of these specific strains, again, that have been added to infant formulas, there's been a significant amount of evidence or research done, and that they can be beneficial in helping to promote the growth of good bacteria. Next, we'll move on to a case of an infant with chronic kidney disease. A 3-month-old infant arrives at his WIC appointment with his mother. She's concerned that he's not gaining weight, and after plotting his growth on the growth chart, and we use the WHO chart because he is less than 2 years of age. You notice that he has dropped from the 25th to the 10th percentile weight for age. He is currently on 27 calories per ounce, similar to PM 6040. What next steps could you discuss, either with mom or, you know, with the local nutritionist or physician that is caring for this baby? So to define Similac PM 6040, basically it stands for protein modification, 60% whey, 40% casein. This formula has been around for a long time. It's only available in powder. It is indicated for infants whose condition requires a lower amount of certain electrolytes and or minerals. Most commonly where I see it used, particularly in the hospital setting, it's kids with chronic kidney disease that need a lower amount of phosphorus, potassium, that type of thing. We also see it used less frequently with serum calcium disorders, such as infants with DiGeorge syndrome or something of that sort. One thing that I always like to bring up is, you know, there's really been low iron formulas have basically become obsolete. This is one where it is still, by definition, a low iron formula, and most physicians are not aware of this. And so it's always something good to bring up, just, you know, to bring to their awareness that this baby is most certainly not getting enough iron, particularly if they're not taking in any iron-fortified solids or foods if they're a younger infant. So most will need some type of multivitamin supplement or just iron supplement to meet their needs. So in thinking about this particular infant, we would think about possibly going up on the caloric density. I'd like to talk a little bit about, in general, what we would look at or what some indications would be for increasing caloric density. It's a very common practice, obviously, for rapidly growing preterm infants, for suboptimal growth or failure to thrive, which, you know, when we are talking about this particular case, if we have an infant that has fallen an entire percentile on the growth chart, that certainly needs some attention. For infants who have increased metabolic needs, very common with those who have lung disease or congenital heart disease. Simply the inability to consume adequate volume of standard formula or breast milk. And then it also in the case of this particular infant, if there's a fluid restriction involved, so this is certainly seen in infants with chronic renal failure as well, we don't necessarily want them taking in a large volume of fluid, as that can also stress the kidneys. And so we would look to possibly modulars in this instance for increasing caloric density. In general, concentrating using only the formula, powder or liquid concentrate is usually well tolerated up to about 27 calories per ounce or so. And in infants who have no other issues, particularly having mature renal function, so they're a little bit older, they don't have any chronic underlying issues, some may actually tolerate concentrations up to 30 calories per ounce. So one thing that we will look at on the clinical side is if we are meeting protein needs, we're meeting vitamin and mineral needs, but we're not getting good growth, what we really need to look for is some way to add additional calories, and that's where modulars can be very helpful. So some examples of modulars, they can be in the form of either powder or liquid suspension, and basically mixed with formula, or for older infants and children, sometimes they're added directly to food in order to increase the total caloric or protein content. And in this instance, we would be looking specifically to increase the calorie content or the caloric density. Currently, modulars are available in carbohydrate only, carbohydrate and fat, fat only, as well as protein. one that you've probably heard of or are familiar with is Polycoat. It's available only in powder, and one teaspoon adds about 8 calories. It's nice when you're actually adding it directly to infant formulas because it mixes in very well, it dissolves very well, and it's, you know, fairly inexpensive and fairly easy to access as opposed to some of the other specialized modulators that are on the market. In terms of fat, oftentimes when we're thinking about cost and availability as well, we will often look at just using a standard vegetable oil such as corn, safflower, or canola to add additional calories. If the child happens to have a feeding tube or a G-tube, we can actually put the oil directly in, or we can also add it to the formula. 1 mil equals 8 calories, so for 1 tablespoon, 120 calories. And, you know, sometimes it's sort of a, you know, if you have some underlying hints in terms of the particular patient, do they have some other underlying issue that would cause them to be more likely to malabsorb fat, then you might go with Polycoat. Fat is not going to increase the osmolality of the formula, so if that's a concern, then you might opt to go with fat. I don't think, oftentimes it's not, you know, cut and dry, and sometimes we often are experimenting on what the particular patient might tolerate. Microlipid is another more expensive, you know, form of fat that's already in solution. It mixes better than with the formula than just a typical oil would. But again, it's more expensive. It may not be as easy to access for certain clients or patients. I chose not to talk about MCT as a modular or median chain triglyceride. We'll touch base on that a little bit with the next case study, but I would say really in practice, we use it very, very infrequently. It's very expensive. It comes in a very large bottle that oftentimes, in terms of storage, by the time you know, use it in the amounts that are needed for a small infant, there's a lot of waste. So we really very carefully choose which patients really benefit from it. And a lot of times it's just having a conversation with the provider to determine whether the median chain triglyceride is really necessary, because for a majority of infants, they do fine with just the standard fat modulator. So speaking of chylothorax, I've mentioned that word several times. We will hop into our next example kiddo here. A 6-month-old recently had cardiac surgery and developed a post-op chylothorax. She was sent home on 24 calorie per ounce Empaport Lipol and was told by her cardiologist to continue this for about 6 weeks. Mom has specific questions about the fat in the formula. She's also wondering if she can start infant solids. What advice could you give her in this instance? So, I don't know how familiar all of you are with a chylothorax, but this is something that is, you know, fairly common. We have a fairly large cardiac population here at UW, and this is unfortunately one of those complications that we see in the post-op period. And it's essentially where we need to institute a formula that is very high in medium chain triglycerides. Essentially, long chain fat, which is what is found in breast milk and the standard, you know, fat in infant formula and foods that we eat, is transported and digested through the lymphatic system, and essentially will exacerbate this chylothorax or this output. So when we metabolize long-chain fat, we can exacerbate this problem. So we immediately upon discovering this, we need to put the infant on a high medium chain triglyceride formula. One of the newer ones within recent years on the market is Enfaport. 84% of the fat in the formula is medium chain triglycerides, so a very high proportion of fat. It comes ready to feed at 30 calories per ounce, and then we can add water as needed to get it to the appropriate caloric density. I would say most kids are probably somewhere between 24 to 27 calories per ounce. Another formula that is currently used is Monogen. Similar to Enfaport, it's about 90% of fat is medium chain triglycerides, and this is only available in powder. So in the hospital setting, we try to use as much liquid as possible to decrease the risk for bacterial contamination. And then I know a lot of you are familiar with Portagen. In theory, it's not recommended for infants because it is not nutritionally complete. It actually does not have any selenium. So for infants who end up being on that for a period of time are at risk for trace element deficiencies as well as essential fatty acid deficiencies. Oh, and I forgot to mention, in terms of, the solid food introduction, that might be a conversation to have with provider, the local nutritionist. However, there really shouldn't be any contraindication to doing anything that's basically fat-free infant foods if this child is otherwise, developmentally appropriate, she's 6 months old. But basically, we cannot be doing anything like with gravy, we can't be doing avocados. It has to be, fruits, vegetables, things that are completely void of fat. Next, we'll talk a little bit about both the protein hydrolysate and the elemental formulas. And I thought we could just use the context of milk protein allergy to kind of get us through some of those in a more of an applicable way. So CF was breastfed for 1 month when she developed bloody stool. She stopped breastfeeding and switched into soy formula a couple days ago. Mom is wondering if she could continue with the soy formula or what would be best for her infant. So in general, we aren't going to really touch on soy formulas here, but I just at least wanted to bring it up in the context of allergy. Most pediatricians, gastroenterologists do not go to a soy formula if they are leery or thinking that a baby has cow's milk protein allergy. And the reason for this is there is a large cross-reactivity between cow's milk allergy and soy allergy. And so a lot of infants who are in fact allergic to cow's milk protein are also allergic to soy. So for most babies, unless, we are really concerned about, cost or things of that nature, we will go directly to what we would call a protein hydrolysate formula. So protein hydrolysis splits basically the whole protein into simpler units, peptides, amino acids, and there's a couple different types of protein hydrolysates. The partially hydrolyzed, which is essentially, like, for those of you who have, Good Start Gel or are familiar with Good Start Gel, that's a partially hydrolyzed whey formula. And then we also have the extensively hydrolyzed, and those are all extensively hydrolyzed cakes. And those would be the types that would be considered hypoallergenic and that we could utilize in the sense of the next sort of except for one who has a cow's milk allergy. These formulas are also more easily digested and absorbed, which makes sense since they're already partially broken down. They're recommended for infants with cow's milk protein or soy protein allergy. And then I'll go through a couple slides on the next several pages, kind of comparing and contrasting the formulas and how they're slightly different. For Alimentum and Progestimil, these can also be used for infants who have fat malabsorption. So for example, if any of you have worked with a patient with cystic fibrosis, we often use Progestimil as it is has the highest amount of medium-chain triglycerides, where they would be having some issues with pancreatic insufficiency, and that would most likely be the one that's best absorbed for that patient population. So a quick look at the different casein hydrolysates that are currently out there on the market. We have both Nutramigen and Nutramigen with N4-LGG, and I highlighted with N4-LGG because of using this case study as an allergy case, so we'll talk a little bit more about probiotics as we move along here as well. The Alimentum and then the Progestimil. So you'll notice they are identical with regard to caloric distribution. They all have 41% of calories from carbohydrates. The protein content compared to standard infant formulas is slightly higher at 11% of calories. And then fat is pretty standard, roughly half or 48% of calories coming from fat. They are all, as I mentioned, casein hydrolysates and then have supplementation with specific amino acids such as tryptophan, tyrosine, and cysteine to provide all of the essential amino acids. With regards to fat, this is where a large difference is seen. So for the Nutramigen with N4-LGG, or just the Nutramigen, there is no median chain triglycerides. So this would be, pretty much the ideal formula for that patient with cow's milk, soy, protein allergy that doesn't have any issues with absorption. So really that would be kind of the first go-to formula. You see Alimentum, roughly a third of the fat is coming from medium chain triglycerides. So this can also be used with fat malabsorption. I've seen it used in infants who have short bowel syndrome that need things. We will typically start with a whole protein formula or breast milk if we have it, that would be our number one choice, and then we would sort of move down the line in terms of going to protein hydrolysate and then finally to an elemental formula if they're just not tolerating, not absorbing, or not growing. And then finally, as I mentioned, the Progestimil, over half of the fat is coming from MCT, so really for kids who are severely malabsorbing or having severe intolerance. So I mentioned this N4-LGG. I know a lot of you have at least heard the term. And basically, that's a specific type of probiotic. So what are probiotics, per se? There is a definition out there. So they are living microorganisms that, when administered in adequate amounts, exert a health benefit on the host. The examples given here are the Bifidobacterium lactis and the Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG. And that's the Lactobacillus GG is what is found in the Nutramigen. So just like there's criteria for prebiotics, there's also certain criteria for the definition of a probiotic. So it needs to be a purified strain of the microbe. It needs to be identified using specific biochemical and genetic techniques. It also has to be shown in human studies to improve some specific aspect of human health. And then, of course, what we are all concerned about is also safety for target consumers. I know this is a huge area of discussion, particularly in the neonatal intensive care unit setting, as can there be some role for probiotics in the prevention of necrotizing enterocolitis. So this is a huge area of interest. It's a very hot topic, and we've seen a lot of changes in the last 5 years, and I think we will continue to see more studies, more additions of specific strains to certain formulas, that type of thing. So in terms of the Lactobacillus GG, there is some decent evidence out there for suggestion to help with certain patients, young patient populations, one of those being young infants with rotavirus. So studies have shown that the addition of Lactobacillus GG can reduce the duration of the diarrheal phase of infection by 1 to 3 days, which doesn't sound, I guess, like a huge amount, but if you think of that in terms of even babies being admitted to the hospital, you know, decreasing their stay can be a huge decrease in cost. Also, if a probiotic, or specifically the LGG, is administered within 2.5 days of the onset of diarrhea, that can also reduce length of hospital stay by close to 50%. So that's a huge win-win. And then some recent studies, and this is where it comes in that they're specifically adding this to the Nutriamagen because it's kind of our go-to hydrolysate for infants with cow or soy milk protein allergy, is that it can reduce the risk of cow's milk allergy, as well as there's some recent studies that have shown that it may allow for a faster transition to cow's milk protein tolerance. As we know, you know, cow's milk protein is one of those allergies that tend to be outgrown at some point. Most kids often will get retested around the age of 1 year. But some of the evidence is showing that if you have this probiotic on board, you're more likely to tolerate the cow's milk protein sooner. So we will continue our case with milk protein allergy. CS has since been to a pediatric gastroenterologist, and she has continued with poor growth and intolerance. So what would the next step in formula be for her? What could some potential choice in formula be for her? So that leads us into the discussion on the free amino acid formulas that are out there, or the elemental formulas. These are where the proteins are completely broken down into amino acids and are basically kind of the last line of defense for kids who have severe malabsorption and are severely intolerant to any other type of protein. Again, we'll look at the different elemental formulas that are out there, not only because you may be using or have access to like one or two for your particular clients, but just to know what some of the differences might be so that if you're having a conversation, this can really arm you with some of the knowledge to advocate for potentially one over the other if you're lucky enough to have more than one choice or one option in your state. So in terms of both the carbohydrate and the protein content, these are fairly identical. Corn syrup solids in terms of the carbohydrate, and then, as I mentioned, the protein is 100% amino acid. In terms of protein content total, they're slightly different. Elicare has the highest amount at 15%, and then Pure Amino, which I wanted to mention, a lot of you are probably aware that they recently changed the name from Nutriamagen AA Lipo to Pure Amino, And from my understanding, there's really no change in terms of what's in the formula. It's just more clarification. I think there was some confusion between Etramigen and Etramigen AA. Looking at the facts, the pure amino has no MCT, and then Neocate and Elicare are identical with about a third of their fat coming from MCT. So again, we could use these as well for kids who are having some issues with malabsorption. Next, we're going to transition into talking a little bit about the preterm and the preterm discharge formulas. And then after that, we will get into the question and answer session. So as we mentioned earlier, if you're, I know we're going through quite a few topics as I speak here, but if you are thinking of questions as we go along, again, feel free to send them in and we'll answer them at the end. So a term infant with failure to thrive. So a 4-month-old infant weighing 5 kilos is seen for an appointment. He was recently at the pediatrician, who was extremely concerned about poor weight gain. Dad brings a script with him for 24 calorie per ounce Enfamil premature. What concerns and suggestions could you discuss with the pediatrician? So there's a couple red flags here, and we'll get through this as we describe kind of what each of these formulas are. So specifically, preterm formulas are meant for infants that are born less than 34 to 35 weeks or a birth weight of less than 2 kilos if human milk or breast milk is not available. These are continued until a weight of about 2.5, sometimes 3 kilos or near discharge from the hospital. So most kids who are going home are not sent home on these formulas. And the reason, you know, they're extremely high in some of the fat-soluble vitamins. So for this particular baby, you know, at 5 kilos, if we were going to put him on a preterm formula, we could certainly do some damage in terms of, you know, vitamin A taxes. There are certain patients that, you know, have certain complex medical conditions where they may continue to use formulas longer, and that's, you know, dependent on discussion with the medical team. These formulas are available in ready-to-feed only in 20 cal, 24, and 30 calories per ounce. They also have several high-protein versions now for the 24 cal, as protein has become a huge target for improved growth in the preemie population. They have modified carbohydrate and fat sources for easier digestion and absorption, as well as decreased lactose as part of their fat, roughly half, coming in for easier digestion and absorption. As I mentioned, they can contain a larger amount of micronutrients, so most of these babies are missing out on these during primarily the last trimester, calcium, phosphorus, as well as vitamins A and D. They have a higher amount of protein as well. For the standard preemie formulas, they're roughly 12% of calories. The preterm discharge formulas are indicated for preterm infants whose birth weight is going to be greater than 2 kilos. Again, when breast milk, human milk, a lot of NICUs are using donor milk, when that is not available. It's used as a transition from the preterm formula in preparation for discharge home. And then we also would use it as a supplement to breast milk for preterm infants who are not growing well. So we can either fortify breast milk with the preterm discharge formula, or in some cases we will alternate feeding depending on, you know, mom's milk supply. And it's recommended that these are continued to at least the postnatal age of 9 months, especially if the child is not able to attain catch-up growth. Common formulas that are out there in terms of preterm discharge, the EmphaCare, NeoSure, and then the newer, the Good Start Nourish. The standard caloric density for these formulas is, you know, in between standard and then the preterm at 22 calories per ounce. The typical caloric distribution is listed there for you. Roughly 40% of calories from carbohydrates. Protein, again, is higher than what you're going to see in the standard infant formulas to help with weight gain and linear growth as well. And then there is some proportion of fat that's coming from medium chain triglycerides to help with absorption. So what I've seen, you know, and the reason why I brought this up in the case study is, you know, sometimes physicians simply want a higher caloric density for a particular infant because they're not growing well. And we can essentially do that. I can't really think of one formula off the top of my head that we can't create into a higher caloric density. There are, you know, different recipes depending on the formula, but sometimes it's just having a conversation. And if it's really the caloric density that they're looking for, a lot of infants can stay on their standard, you know, cow's milk-based formula, and we just need a recipe and some education for the provider and the family on how to prepare that so that the child can get more calories in a smaller volume, but not overdoing it or not providing all of these other things that a, you know, a term infant would particularly need for growth. Again, the preterm discharge formulas have higher vitamins, minerals compared to standard, and they also have a higher calcium-phosphorus ratio, which is meant to help, again, achieve better bone development as well as linear growth. So before questions, I just wanted to leave you with product resources in terms of, you know, where you can look something up so that if it's a particular formula that you're not familiar with, the best way to get the most up-to-date information is on the website. Actually, some of these companies also have apps now. I've noticed that if you have a smartphone, you can install the app and look up nutritional information just on your phone. It's pretty easy. And I didn't really talk about any of the store brand products, but I did leave that website at the bottom, you know, thinking about particularly if there are clients that you're working with that we are not able to provide all of the infant formula to meet their needs, they can certainly utilize some of the store brand products for half of the cost, and they are all made, whether it's Target or Walgreens, Walmart, they're all made by the same manufacturer, and that website is at the bottom.